Oh, yes, it's that time again. Time for your Friday Night Fright. This is Unexplained Incorporated, and I am your host, Phantom Phil. As usual, at this time on a Friday night or whenever you are listening to this very show, we are open for business and ready to believe you. And for the true to heart people who love hearing stories from paranormal investigators, ghost hunters, or just good old-fashioned historical ghost tales, this episode is for you, as we are right in the middle of spooky season, and we keep that trend continuing from an individual that is really busy and is very active and doing a lot to help serve curious minds like our own. We're going to get to her in a minute or so when we do the formal introduction from Angel Card Amy, but the founder of Ghost Biker Explorations, Miranda Young, from the deep south of the United States. I got her on through the connection she has to Dr. Christy Sumner, and this is one interview you do not want to miss. So much going on in it, and we're definitely going to have to do round two at some point or another. Got some business to take care of after the show, or after the interview, I should say. But first, I just want to say that the Legion of the True Believers is steadily growing. And I was looking at some stats just a couple of weeks ago, and we had our first ever True Believers join us from Tokyo, Japan. So Japan, if you're listening and this is translating for you, welcome aboard, domo arigato. That's the extent of my Japanese, but I'm so happy you're checking us out in the land of the rising sun. More and more countries jumping on board, but this one really caught me off guard in the best way possible. So I hope you enjoy what you're hearing and that you're able to stay on and continue the journey with us, the True Believers, and the crew of Unexplained Incorporated. And of course, the most diehard crew member, the one and only Angel Card Amy. She's got the Halloween decorations up. She's ready to go. Hopefully she's got more plans in place than when we recorded the case study and said she was doing nothing. I think she'll be up to something for sure. But here she is with this week's introduction of Miranda Young.
Miranda Young is the founder of Ghost Biker Explorations, based out of Tennessee. She has taken her passions of riding, photography, and exploring the paranormal to the next level, merging them into a single business. You'll hear how road trips on her bike to abandoned and haunted locations caught fire on social media and gave her the idea to do this. We will also hear about her friendship with past unexplained guest, Dr. Christy Sumner. Strap in and fly down the open road like a ghost rider now.
True Believers, welcome back to another special Unexplained Incorporated right in the middle of spooky season. And I have the ghost biker herself, Miranda Young. Miranda, thank you for taking the time. I got to ask right off the bat, where are you joining myself in the True Believers from today?
Absolutely. So, you know, first off, thank you so much for having me on today, Phil. I am actually here live at the historic Scott County Jail, and I'm in the booking room. And as you can kind of see behind me here, we have everything is the way it was when it closed in 2007.
Right on. And your good friend, Dr. Christy Sumner, joined me on the podcast back in August. And I believe she talked to me from this exact room that you're in, if my memory serves me correctly. So it's a good location for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Dr. Christy Sumner and I, we became business partners a little bit earlier this year. We officially opened the jail in September of 2021, and we had formed a company called History Highways and Haunts LLC, where we are running the museum. We're also running paranormal tours, public ghost hunts, and just really essentially opening the museum and making it accessible for the community to be able to come in and find out some local true crime history.
Yeah, because anything to do with the paranormal or the supernatural has a lot of history involved. So the people who love history, they will love what you're doing as well. So before we started recording, you were telling me that you had a busy day that you were not expecting at the museum, which is always good. And that we're coming up to smack dab in the middle of October, which means Halloween's only a couple of weeks away. And there's lots going on in your neck of the woods, and some of our true believers are out there as well. So if you could tell us about some of the events going up more locally in your part of the world, I'm sure it will connect with someone.
Awesome. Yeah, and thank you for allowing me to do that. So the jail is located here in Huntsville, Tennessee, which is in East Tennessee, up like right along, just right across the Kentucky border. And so we've got some really cool things here planned for October coming up this Saturday, which will be the 16th, and next Saturday, which will be the 23rd. We're having crafts, Halloween crafts for the kids here in the jailhouse recreation yard, where they can come in and they can do all kinds of really cool crafts, masks, pumpkins. Got a lot of really cool things planned. Tickets are being sold at the door, but if anyone wants to reach out to us and kind of give us a head count that they're coming, we would appreciate that. Although I think we're prepared, but we've got those two dates. We also have flashlight tours, which are an hour and a half in length, and we take you and give you the history of the jail, telling you some spooky stories as well as the history, and all that's done at night. And then we're also doing public ghost hunts, where myself and then also Dr. Christy Sumner host a 3-hour ghost hunt here at the jail, where we will, you know, bring you in, give you a tour, tell you about the equipment we're going to be using, host the tour for 2 hours, and then we'll open it up and allow people to go through and investigate for themselves for an hour. And so we had some flashlight tours this past week. Everyone had a great time with it. Those were the first ones we had. And so you can find that information on our website at www.historicscottcojail.com or on the Historic Scott County Jail Facebook page. We do suggest that you guys reserve those tickets online, because they have been very popular. And we do sell flashlight tickets at the door, but we don't sell the public ghost hunt tickets at the door. So hoping to get a pretty good turnout. We've actually had quite a few paranormal investigators come here to the location over the last couple, the last 5 weeks, and a lot of activity there. So we are open as well for private ghost hunting investigation, or excuse me, for private paranormal investigations, if folks have a team and they want to rent the jail out for the night.
Yeah, sounds like you have a lot of amazing stuff going on. A couple of questions from all that, and then we're going to get a recap of all your website and infos at the end of this. But so 3 hours, that's a pretty substantial amount of time to take people on a ghost hunt. Do you guys feel that's the perfect amount of time? Is it too long or too short? I've been on a couple of similar ones where, and a lot of this had to do with COVID restrictions, and because it was indoors where I went, they could only do like maybe an hour at a time or less. Do you feel that's a good time frame for what you're trying to do?
I think so. You know, for the actual paranormal investigators, they're here from 8:30 until 3 a.m., and most of them do seem to stay the full time. So when we were trying to set the time and figure out what would end up being best for the more novice public ghost hunts, we got to thinking, you know, so the jail is three levels. And there's, you know, it housed up to 50 inmates. And so there's a pretty decent amount of space with some really cool stories to cover. So we really felt like we would spend about an hour on each floor And then, and we would switch out the groups. So half the time the folks would be with me, the other half they would be with Christy. And then they would get that full hour to kind of go and investigate the way they want. From what we found, sometimes people can be a little bit shy, especially if it's their first investigation. Mm. So we do have a lot of different things planned as far as the time that they're here. So we hope that the 3 hours will, we know it will be enough time, but to cover everything, just not sure, you know, if folks want to investigate longer, we would encourage at that point to do a private investigation.
And do you guys find that during public tours, do you get a decent amount of activity? Because one challenge, I guess, you always face is that when you're opening up this up to the public and people who aren't used to this pace of touring and investigating, they may become a little impatient, especially if any activity is not to be documented. So how has the activity been so far, and have people kept their cool and kept their patience with everything?
So far, so good. You know, last week was our first week, and we had, we didn't have any ghost hunts last week. We did have flashlight tours. And typically we're not ghost hunting on those, but we do put equipment out there while we're doing our flashlight tours, just to really sort of educate folks on. So when we're telling the stories about how we captured this activity, we want to be able to show them, you know, because they may not be familiar with what a REM pod is or an EDI box. And so we've actually had, while we were doing the flashlight tour telling ghost stories, we did have some of our equipment go off, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And so we weren't actively investigating on those. And the folks that had come, they were very enthusiastic. It's going to be interesting to see with the actual ghost hunts, because I know TV has done a good job as far as getting the word out about what we do, yeah. But it's done a not so great job of creating the instant gratification expectation level, because people don't always realize that when you're coming in, there's a lot of sitting, a lot of being quiet, a lot of question asking, and a lot of waiting. So I'm very curious to see how that is. And we do try to really inform people that it's like, this is not a haunted house. So you're mm-hmm. not going to have jump scares. Activity is not always guaranteed, but, you know, to be quiet and be patient. So we're hopeful. And the folks that have reached out and reserved their tickets, in talking to them, they at least seem to have a pretty good grasp. So I guess we'll see. But so far, I mean, the spirits here have been active. They're active day and night. Nice. So so we'll see how it goes.
That's good. And I have a theory that the general buying public is listening to more and more shows like this one. And that might be why they're just cool and even keel with everything. And every single investigator I have had on, whether I ask the question or they just blurt it out, says the same thing about the TV shows. Well, they've given us a lot of exposure, but they've also given us a great misrepresentation of what we actually do. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that you always have to work through, I guess.
You do. And, you know, a lot of the folks that watch my personal show, Ghost Biker Explorations, a lot of them are not paranormal investigators. They tend to either be history buffs or bikers, because I interact, and one of my demographics that watches, actually my highest demographic, are bikers. And so a lot of them, they're not watching the shows that are on TV. And so that's why I structure mine the way that I do, with going in and trying, I show the travel, I show the investigation, and I share a whole lot of history with it. So if somebody's not really into the paranormal, I've had them reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I started watching this because I love all the history that you cover. And that got me into the paranormal, and I want to go and kind of experience this and see more. So I think a lot of the folks that are coming to this, and Soul Sisters is the same way, they're really heavy on the history as well. So a lot of those folks that are coming in, they're not your typical a paranormal investigator. Most of those, they're going to go with the private investigations. But yeah, we are finding that it's sort of like a lot of them are just here to, they're here to hear the history. And if they get activity, then that's just icing on the cake. Or at least have something unexplained happen. You know, that always really kind of helps with things.
At the very least, investigations and ghost tours I've been on, at the very least, it's a night out that's a little unorthodox and it's a little different. So, I mean, you get that at the very least, even if you don't get the activity and whatnot that you're coming from. So I'm going to talk about your show a little bit later on, and I imagine it's got to be really nice to have your own platform and not be chained to a network deal with ads and commercials and all that. Yeah, I'll get to that in a little while. But I want to know a little bit more about your background and how you arrived to the present moment and basically living your dream and just doing what you do, which is great for everyone, really. So you identify as a biker. It's a major passion in your life. You love to ride. You love to travel. Someone like me who's never even been on a bike and couldn't even tell them apart, I don't want to know which bikes are the best for this or that. But I do have one question about your travels, which I would love to know, is what is the spiritual side to riding on a bike on an open highway? Like, how does it make you feel on the inside? How does it make you feel so alive? Because to me, that's way more interesting than any of the technical specs you could probably break down for someone like me.
Absolutely. And that's a great question. So, so for me, you know, I've been riding for, I guess about 13 years now. I didn't start riding until I was 29. And, so, you know, I'd always enjoyed it, wanted to get out there and do it just, you know, just from talking to friends and stuff and seeing people ride. I don't come from a family of bikers or anything like that. So I was sort of on my own having to learn, and I went and took the safety courses and such and got my license and pretty much out on the bike every opportunity I can get. I'll kind of step back to when I started. I essentially started investigating about the same time that I started riding. And so I had always had an interest in storytelling and history and the and just always really enjoyed the paranormal. But I was actually approached by a team. They saw my background was in photography, marketing, and design. And so I had been approached by the team to look at some pictures and essentially debunk some pictures from investigations that they had been on. And so, you know, he one picture turned into two, and two turned into 10, and 10 into 20. And that eventually turned into an investigation. So I'd been reviewing so many different images and really kind of come, and I ended up developing essentially an 11-point system that I run all photos through while after looking at all this. And so, so I went on my first investigation and we had a lot of activity. It was just myself and two guys from the team. We investigated a local bar and marina. And we had everything from some very good Class A EVPs, flashlight interactions, to I was even touched for the first time there. And, you know, my experience with it had really just been seeing what was on television, essentially the early ghost hunters and early ghost adventures. So I really didn't know what to expect when I went into this location. But it was very active, and so that investigation ended up turning into a couple other investigations, and I ended up joining the team. And so I was with the team for about 8 years, and I did their photo analyzing as well as their marketing and social media, and then putting the videos together that they would put out. And I did find that when I wasn't doing that, because we were essentially out investigating usually somewhere once a month. It might be some big commercial location, or it may be a residential, because we did do a lot of residentials with this team. But we were essentially investigating somewhere at least once a month. And when I wasn't investigating with the team, I found that I was always out on the motorcycle riding to these different locations, probably more of urbex or urban exploring type locations, but I was documenting them through my photography and then also putting them on my social media. And so a lot of the places that I was visiting, they most of them kind of had a really interesting history or interesting story behind them. And they started really getting a lot of attention, and people were wondering, you know, what's the story behind these places? Are the places haunted? Can you give us more? And so as I was, you know, investigating with the team, and I was sometimes riding my motorcycle to the investigations, not always, because it really just depended on what we were doing. But I really started thinking, well, why don't, rather than just putting things out there the way that I'm doing, why don't I document this through video? And so I was kind of chatting with a friend about it, just as I was loading up and getting ready to actually ride my bike to one of the team investigations. And I said, oh yeah, just call me the Ghost Biker. And she started laughing about it. And she's like, you know, I would watch that. And so, so I was like, And so that kind of got the wheels spinning. And as I had said before, being in marketing and everything, I really sat down and thought, okay, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it right, rather than just going investigating somewhere and putting a video out. I want to release it as a season. And so, so I came up with my logo and my marketing plan of how I wanted to do it. And I knew I wanted to keep the episodes to be around 20 minutes. Because I wanted them to be essentially, you know, I always say it's like kind of like a woman's skirt. Keep it short enough to draw attention, but long enough to cover all the important parts.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah. And the average person's attention span is right around 20 minutes. So my episodes range from 20 to 40 minutes, depending on the location. And I always cover the travel to that spot, which would be on the bike. And then I talk about the history of that specific location, and then I cover the investigation. And so I really made sure to not really get into the techniques and the tools when I was doing the show, but to rather do a live stream the Thursday after. So the episodes release on Tuesday. I do a live stream on Thursday, and then I actually talk about the location. I talk about the techniques. I talk about the tools. And I do that live so that folks can come back and ask questions. And that kind of helps, since, again, a lot of the people aren't that watch my show aren't investigators. And so I really started planning all this out and thought, what better time to release it than get it all ready for October? Mm-hmm. Plus, being a solo investigator, it's always either just me or myself and a videographer at these locations, unless I'm doing a collaboration. It takes me a little bit because I spend a lot of time researching on the front end, and then I have to go and review all of my recorders, all of my audio and video up until, and then I self-produce the episodes. So there's a whole lot involved with it. And so the more I sat and thought about it, I was like, okay, if I'm going to devote all this time to it, I'm doing all this other stuff with my team that I'm on. I'm going to step away from the team, let them fill my role, and then move into doing, you know, what I'm doing with Ghost Biker and see where it goes. And I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. Put that first season out, and everything just really took off. And so, so to kind of get to the original question in a long-winded way, the bike, you know, it plays a real important part for me as I'm getting ready for these investigations, because it, you know, I do a prayer of protection before I go and a prayer of protection after, but this really helps me. I can almost get lost in it when I'm riding. It's easy for me to really focus on the investigation, get a plan together as to kind of how I want to investigate, where I want to investigate, kind of running through the stories in my mind and some of the questions. Now, a lot of that changes, obviously, when I get there, because a lot of the time the location may dictate a little bit about where I'm going to actually start. But it spiritually, it really helps me to have that time to really be able to connect with the location that I'm going to. And it works out great. I never thought I'd be able to combine my passions of doing ghost hunting and investigating and riding into one and be doing my dream.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what it's all about. And what was so great about everything you just said is you answered several questions I had laid out already, but you gave me several new ones as well, which is
great.
What I love about Spur of the Moment. And I guess my first one is, because you just touched upon it, would you say traveling on your bike to an investigation or just hitting the open highway, does it put you in a bit of a meditative state? Would you say?
Absolutely.
If you will? Yeah.
Absolutely. It really does. I mean, even if I'm not, you know, even if I'm not going to an investigation, if I'm just going out riding to see what kind of places I can find, I do tend to go in that meditative state because that is definitely my happy place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, it helps me think, it helps give me that clarity. Because for me, when I'm going to an investigation, it's really important to me to go in centered, grounded, and in a state where like everything else is just pushed aside, because I feel like a lot of that affects the type of activity or the type of night that I have. So if, you know, if I'm having a bad day, if I'm mad at somebody, now, obviously, you know, if you have an investigation scheduled, you can't help if you have it scheduled and what's happened that day. Yeah. But I do have control over how I let it affect me. And so I don't like to go into a location if I'm in any other state of mind other than what I'm focused on there to do. And so being on the motorcycle really helps me to put all that aside, because you do really have to. So a lot of the time it's, you know, accidents and stuff happen because of other people around, you know, and the cars and stuff. And so I kind of parallel ghost hunting and motorcycles, because you do have to be aware, focused, and in that moment mm-hmm. when you're doing either of those two tasks, because it's easy to lose the respect of the bike, lose the respect of the location. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've lost control at that point. And so to me, that always helps me to be in that state and be able to walk in and do what I need to do. And so I kind of pattern my paranormal investigation style with the way I ride, with just being there, taking care of that task, and being focused.
That's great. A couple of things I want to add to that is, number one, based on other investigators I've talked to, you can do all the protection modes that you want. Like you said, you stay a prayer for yourself, but if you're bringing negative energy in with you, because you're an energetic body, they're disembodied energetic forces. And if you're bringing negativity in, you're likely going to get it back. And sometimes you'll get that negativity back from in the forms of entities or poltergeists when you don't ask for it, because they're going through their own, you know, whatever it is. Yes. And also, one other thing you've touched upon was that someone, you know, anyone could look at you from a distance and say, oh, ghost biker, what is this? This is a gimmick. This is a gimmick to get eyeballs. And you said it yourself. You have a marketing background. You know what makes things pop. But this is, in my opinion, and I'm sure the listeners would agree as well, you found a niche, and you found a niche that really works, because this is who you are. You're not pretending to be someone to get eyeballs right. on what you're doing. And that's come across a great deal in the short time we've been talking to each other.
Thank you.
I wanted to, yeah, no problem. I wanted to ask you at this point in time, would this transition into what you've created been much harder if you didn't have a background in, say, marketing and photography?
Hit your first question where you were talking about, you know, essentially sort of a gimmick. And you're exactly right. You know, for me, it is combining the two, but this has really given me an opportunity to be able to essentially, I feel like, take the paranormal, which is a subculture. And, you know, there's a lot of us, but it's also kind of small and tight knit in a way. I mean, most mm-hmm. of us know each other. And so being able to take this subculture, which I feel like is not always taken the most serious, and really help to move it into the mainstream, because I do paracons and that sort of thing, but I do actually do a lot of events with Harley Davidson. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a big event in Florida it's over Halloween weekend, where we're doing a meet and greet on Saturday, and on Sunday I'm hosting a haunted motorcycle ride. And so, you know, I'll do that. I do that around here with the jail, and then I'll also do that in different areas where I will go and I'll map out a route, and then I'll take stories from the route, because for us as bikers, it's not about the destination, but more about the journey there. And so what a lot of people don't realize are, especially here, so I'll take Tennessee as an example. On these mountain roads, you'll pass these little green signs saying the little towns that you're in. And for most of us, it's just, you just pass through it and you move on. But each of those towns have a story, and a lot of them have local legends and such. And so what I do is I go in and I find the history and the hauntings, and I'll put those into a video, put the route out, and say, this is where we're going to be traveling, and here's the history on it. And then we travel, and we go through those areas, and then they usually end either like here at the jail or at a bike event, like we'll be the one down at the Harley-Davidson. So it actually works well with what I always tell people. I always tell them, if you take a map, close your eyes, and touch anywhere on that map, I guarantee you the spot that you touch will have some kind of story that's either locally known or possibly regionally known. And so so I really feel as though this actually kind of helps to get what we're doing with the paranormal and put it in front of a more mainstream audience to potentially be taken more seriously. And then also it's like we talked about, it's just being true to myself, you know, as far as, you know, taking the bike to the different locations and just putting it out there. But it does really put me in that niche. And so for your second question, where you were talking about with this location, I firmly believe that it's all worked together hand in hand. If I've been investigating for just under 15 years now, and I feel like if I hadn't started with the team and then evolved into Ghost Biker and then really pushed and kept going with Ghost Biker, I obviously wouldn't have met Dr. Sumner, and we wouldn't have found that we had this very common way of investigating. I feel as though that really helped to essentially build my portfolio of knowing, you know, how to run a location like this, because we're able to know essentially what paranormal investigators like and dislike just based on the places we go to, and then also sort of the things of how to run it, and really even how to approach the city to be able to get into this type of position that we're in today. And so I think it all is related, and I feel like if I didn't have the background that I have, I don't think it would be as easy to progress forward with all of it. Because to me, the dream, I mean, you talk to a lot of people and they may tell you no, but a lot of the time it's to get your own show, you know, or to get on with a network and such. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You know, that is a good goal to have. But for me, you know, I got the name Ghost Biker trademarked and all of that I did. And I've actually, I've been under a network contract last year. But it was, you know, when I was very strict about how, when they came to me, how it was going to be. And we actually went back and forth for 3 months, and I actually turned two other contracts down because essentially I'm very strict with my brand and what I do. And I don't want the constraints of a network. I don't want, you know, all of that. But I was very strict about it. We did come to an agreement, but unfortunately with COVID and all of that, the contract, we went through the 9 months and it didn't end up materializing. But in my mind, it's like, you know, if I would much rather self-produce and, you know, it's like, if that's what you want to do and put your stuff out there, just do it yourself, you mm-hmm. know?
100%. The gatekeepers don't quite have the power that they used to.
That's right.
In terms of stuff that like what you or I to do. You talked about pointing a place out on the map and it's likely got a story. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I don't target, you know, a lot of big name investigators is that doing the show the last year and a half, I find a lot of local investigators, especially with people who live in areas I'm not familiar with. Like, for example, I've been to like 21 states. Tennessee is not one of them. It's on my list, but I haven't done it yet. And I find they have way more interesting stories and legends that you probably won't hear on the bigger platforms. And I want to get to some of the lesser known ones you have found in your travels. But first, I don't think you've touched upon this yet, so I'm going to ask it right now. Did you actually have any paranormal experiences growing up?
I didn't. And that's actually a question I get asked a lot, because I know a lot of people will say, oh, I grew up in a haunted house, or I grew up, you know, in this area. I actually didn't. I've always been a believer. But my background with that really comes from the storytelling aspect. And so I am here in the Appalachian Mountains, and my grandmother, she lived to be 95. And so she was old when I was young, and she would tell me a lot of different stories about growing up in the Appalachian Mountains and folklore and different legends. And then my dad would also take me on the weekends. He would take me back roads riding in the truck and talking about, you know, the way the town, sort of the ghosts of the towns that used to be in these different mountain communities. And so that's really where my passion came from with that. And I spent a lot of time in the library reading a lot of books on folklore and about different haunted areas. But I have to really credit a lot to my elementary school librarian. As I say, I didn't grow up in a haunted house, but I did go to a haunted elementary school. Oh. And back in 1928, and this is kind of how it is also in a lot of mountain communities around here. A lot of the buildings served multiple purposes. So my elementary school back in the 1920s was also a movie theater up on the upper floor. And so back in 1928, there was a shootout that occurred. They were showing a comedy. There was a local doctor inside of the theater, and he had this loud, boisterous laugh. And so he was being a little bit disruptive. The local deputy that was there, that was sitting in and kind of watching the crowd there at the movies, he had warned him to be quiet, and the doctor wasn't quiet. And so the deputy, he ended up, excuse me, he must have been having a bad day, because he ended up firing 5 shots into this doctor, and he ended up killing another deputy sheriff that was there. And actually, ironically enough, this particular deputy, Deputy Fowler, who he was the last person to actually be, that was here housed in this jail, that was executed from this jail. And so so our librarian, she made sure from all the time that she spent in that, or that she worked down there at the school, that every year of students that came through in Halloween, that they knew the story of the doctor who was shot. And so it was always said you could hear phantom laughter, you could hear an old projection screen running, and you could also hear phantom gunshots. And when they tore the school down, actually on that second level, you could still see the bullet holes from that one particular night where they had shot. So again, no direct experience for me, but you know, I did have that, and that's something that's always stuck with me. And you know, of course, as kids, we would dare each other to go up on that level and see if you could hear anything. I never heard anything, but it was fun to do.
That's too bad, but I mean, that is a story at a young age that will leave a very strong impression. Up here in Canada, my public school was out at the far reaches of the county in a one-road town beside a cornfield. It didn't have nearly the exciting backstory that did. Actually, I think my school wasn't built until like the mid to late 60s, so it doesn't stretch back that far. But I will second you on this. My library was a treasure trove of signing out books on the unexplained and ghosts and all that stuff. And this is before the internet and much of cable television. So my elementary school library played a big role in forming my path as well. But I had to ask you, because I had a feeling that you would have told me already if you had paranormal experiences growing up. And out of all the investigators I've interviewed, you're one of the few that has said, nope, didn't have them. So
Rare. No, I mean, if I did, you know, I mean, because I'm sure supernatural stuff or unexplained things happen, but nothing that was a really profound aha moment. You know, it's funny. I was actually quite skittish as a child. And when I would read some of these mm-hmm. different stories, especially there was one in particular from the Appalachian Mountains, and it was more folklore based, and it really kind of freaked me out. And so I was a daddy's girl, as most Southern girls are. And so I was pretty skittish, and I would often wake him up in the night scared of something that I had heard. And so to go from that to what I do now, sleeping in these locations and doing all this stuff, has been a big growing thing for me, especially with Ghost Biker. Ghost Bikers, you know, it's helped me to essentially come out of my shell and do a lot of things that I typically wouldn't be doing. So yeah, no, nothing that really stands out from my childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's different. So many investigators I talked to, they either had extreme activity or they had activity and then a parent or a guardian didn't believe them. And then that drove them to investigate even further. But I like hearing your story and your angle because it's something different. Thank you. And it's very interesting for sure. So before you tell me about some of your kind of off the beaten path haunted tales and findings, I have a little bit of a theory I want to discuss with you, because on ghost tours I've been to, talking to people on this show, it seems like most of this paranormal activity are the places with the highest activity. Things seem to happen like between the 1800s to like pre-World War II. And then after that, not to say that there aren't more recent haunts, because there are, it seems like it dies down a lot. Like, I'm almost wondering if 30 to 40 years down the road, we're going to be talking about, you know, famous murders or sudden deaths that happened in like the late 90s, and they're going to become the folklore instead of this. And it makes me wonder if there was some planetary energetic resonance as to why there's so much spirit activity from, you know, 1800s to like the 1950s or whatever. And there hasn't been as much since, you know what I mean? Because when you find spirit activity, it always almost seems to go back to that window of time. Do you agree with that? Or,
you know, that does seem to be the case, you know, and I have been asked the question before, you know, why don't we talk to more modern spirits? And I do believe they are out there. Mm-hmm. I just sometimes feel like, for one, I feel like it's not always as romanticized as some of these older stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if there's maybe, I have a couple theories on it. So one of them, I don't know if it's maybe the storytelling generation, if that has sort of died off, or essentially, I think it's kind of coming back, especially with the resurgence of, with paranormal. I think that has actually created a resurgence in the love of history and the love of storytelling. But I think there was a period of time, and it could be generational, because you hit on it just a minute ago about the fact that there are people who say they had experiences and then they're like, their parents essentially shut it down. Well, from what I find here in the South, it seems to be a generational thing. People will say, well, my great grandmother, she believed me, or she would talk about this, and my grandmother. But then when it got to my parents, they just kind of backed off, you know, so I always talked to my great grandmother about it. So it could be the fact that people aren't necessarily telling these stories. With the rise in technology, you know, we're also buried in our phones and computers and stuff, and the TVs, that I don't think a lot of people really listen and pay attention. So I think that could also come from, there may be a point of time where people who, you know, I was born in 1980, and it seems like a lot of folks that were born around my time, they aren't sharing a lot of these stories. They're not sharing these events that happen. So I think there may be a gap, and, you know, where people just aren't sharing that. So that's kind of one of my theories on that. And then two, I think you're right. I think that eventually it will kind of come around where people are talking about spirits of the 90s. And then there could be, I don't know, is there a time limit where it's okay to talk about this stuff? I'll explain that further. So it's like, is there, you know, if there's a car wreck or a like a celebrity passing, you know, we hear in the paranormal community a lot, like I know it was big when Kobe Bryant passed away, you instantly have a couple certain paranormal or YouTubers that reach out like just a few minutes after the word gets out. Yeah. And so then it's sort of like, that's a little too soon, you know? So I wonder, and we're encountering this here at the jail, some of the stories that we're telling, being in a small tight-knit community, you still have family members that are still alive. So I wonder if there's almost like a grace period. And the reason you don't hear about as many is because maybe people are afraid to cover some of the more recent stories due to backlash from family or people that may still be alive that would reach out to either contradict the story or shut them down.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the last thing you want being involved in that is some form of litigation from someone you didn't know was still alive and didn't want their family member's story being told, right?
Yeah, you know, to me, Willow's Weep is an interesting example of that in Cayuga, Indiana. I covered that story in season three, which was last year. And, you know, I had heard stories about this house, and this house has got some fantastical stories that, you know, I feel like some of them are true. I feel like some of them may be a little bit exaggerated, but it's known as the most haunted or the most evil house in America. Yeah. And so I had heard some people's experiences, and then I thought, you know, I don't want to be jaded by all of this, so I'm going to wait and hear about it after my investigation. But I did read up on the newspaper articles, the stories and the stuff of things that had happened there. And interestingly enough, when I booked the location, the owner said, "Now, are you going to go live?" And I was like, "No, I'm filming for my season." And he said, "Well, okay, so you probably don't want to go live because the family is still alive." And so there was an owner before this guy who owned it, and apparently she got the word out. The family that she was talking about, who had owned the house, was like, "No, no, no, you're way off on the way a lot of this stuff happened." And so then they started, when the current owner purchased the house, they actually started protesting events that he was doing. They even went to the local news and was like, and airing this dispute on the news. Before I went, I started reading all this back and forth. And of course, I was very particular with the way I put my episode out, because I try to look for the history and the facts. And so I stated a lot of allegedly happened, you know, and these are the stories surrounding it, but we're going to go and see what we get. And so they actually had a lot of back and forth. And I think there's actually a Facebook page that contradicts this house, Willow's Weep, that it's like, here's the story of my family. And because they really took offense, because there was a lot of stories about drugs and abuse and that sort of thing. And kind of when you start doing that, you have to be careful, because you can get into libel and stuff if you're not careful with how you're putting information out.
Yeah. One example I just want to bring up real quick is, even though the segment is going to end around the 2-year anniversary next spring, I've been doing the monthly case study, which is where me and my friend who helps me with this, we break down a horror movie that's based on a true story. And then we compare the movie to the true events and find all sorts of craziness and discrepancies and whatnot. When we did the first Conjuring movie last spring, it took me to this like half hour YouTube video narrated by one of the owners of that current house, basically calling Andrea Perron a liar and all this. And the ridiculous amount of stalking and harassment this family went through just because their house was featured in the movie was pretty staggering. So, I mean, that's an extreme example of how this stuff can backfire on you. And it kind of reflects what you just told me. But the Conjuring house is a really extreme example, I think.
It is, and it's a great example, because I think people don't think about that. And it's like, and I'll talk about the story of this when we get to it, but one of the particular locations I investigated, and a lot of them that I do like to hit are places that aren't your typical commercial location. Yeah. I like to hit the more local, lesser known. And so one of them in particular, it was a troop train accident. And so, and it's really interesting the way we covered it, but at the very end of it, I actually went through and found photos of the men who had been, who had perished, the soldiers who had perished in the accident, and did like a rolling memorial showing those guys on there, because I essentially wanted to humanize the spirits that we're speaking to. I think a lot of the time people tend to forget that we are speaking. I mean, there are a few instances where they're not human, but for the most part, the spirits we're encountering are spirits of people who were once here. Yep. And so, you know, to show that, that it's like, you know, there is a story. And sometimes as things get passed along through the YouTube world, it gets kind of stretched out. And as you said, like with Hollywood, I think what for something to be based on a true story, there only has to be like a very small percentage that's actually true. It's a very tiny percentage.
One of their favorite loopholes is inspired by true events. If you hear that phrase, there's like the connection is like, oh, we have one person's name based on a real person and that's it. The rest is fictitious.
That's right. I mean, I learned that through a ghost walk in New Orleans. And she was talking about, it's the one that had just come out, the big Netflix. It's, I think it's been like, this is like their third or fourth season.
I can't remember, but yeah.
Yeah, one of them was based out of there, and she was talking about it, and she was telling the difference between inspired by true events and based on a true story, and how if they say that, be careful, because it only literally has to be just a very small percentage to make it. It can be as simple as a name, you know.
Yeah, because some of the past case studies I've done, I've watched a movie before researching the true events and I'm like, oh, this movie's pretty cool. And then I find out the true events, there's like nothing resembling what I saw in the movie. And it's so disappointing. But then I see on the poster based on true events in little tiny letters. And I'm like, oh, so this is how they do it. So I'm glad you got explained to that on a ghost tour as well.
Yes. Cause they were talking about some of the houses that were featured in that show. Mm-hmm. And she started talking about, cause I think Kathy Bates and Courtney Cox is in this series, and she was saying they actually had the two reverse, the actual person would be more that played, that Courtney Cox was playing, would be more like Kathy Bates. And then she started going in and saying, you know, you've got to really be careful, because a couple of those houses there that have this really interesting haunted story in New Orleans, they're more just made up legends, and somehow it's like the story goes viral, you know, in the storytelling community, and somehow it sticks. And I think sometimes that's essentially how creating your own haunting and all of that can essentially be started by that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, it can be manifested for sure. I believe that 100%. The show you might be talking about might be American Horror Story.
Yes.
I was going to say, don't quote me on that, because I actually don't have Netflix and I don't watch a lot of those streaming services. But when you say Kathy Bates, I'm like, oh, wait, I think I know what that is. So
yeah, it was, I'm guilty as well. I very rarely have time for watching shows.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the one they were talking about. And I was like, you know, I'm going to talk about this. And I had it on the tip of my tongue. Yes, it was American.
Okay. American. I was glad I was able to help you remember that. So shifting from New Orleans to a lot more smaller towns and cities, because when I had Christy on the show back in the summer, I mean, she would travel just about anywhere in the US. Like there was very few limits, and I'm going to assume you're the same as well. So what are a few local or smaller haunts, towns, areas, houses you'd like to bring up that you think in the proper way needs a bit more attention, or the story needs more attention and it just hasn't been told? Like, what can you bring us that you would consider somewhat exclusive or you had neat experiences with in your travels?
Sure. So I'll just tag on to what I was saying a moment ago about the troop train accident. Mm-hmm. And this one occurred in the area known as High Cliff, Tennessee, and it's right on the line of Tennessee and Kentucky, literally when you pass High Cliff, you circle into Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually out riding and planning a haunted motorcycle ride. And as I was traveling up this mountain road, I saw this little small 8 inch by 8 inch sign. I mean, it was a very small sign. And it was up on a telephone pole, and it said 1944 troop train accident viewing spot. And so literally was, and this road was just this real windy road. And so you're out of sight of the sign in no time. But what I did notice is that there was really no viewing area. There was no shoulder to pull off on, and there was nothing to see because the trees had all grown up. So I took note of that. And when I got home, I started doing a little research, and I found that this particular troop train accident ranks in the top 25 troop train accidents in the world. And it's like in the top 5 in the US. Oh. And so, yes. Yeah, so essentially back in 1944, there was a train that was carrying fresh military recruits from the Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky area. And they were traveling down, getting ready for, the war. And so, I mean, these kids hadn't even been to basic training yet. So they were traveling down these winding mountain railroad tracks, and the track or the train ended up jumping the track and going into the area, which is known as the Jellicoe Narrows, which was essentially a very rocky river down below. And because this area is very rural, it did take them quite some time to get the people, the injured as well as the deceased, out of the train wreckage. And then they took them over to the nearby town, which the nearby town didn't have the capacity to take care of them. So they were going to have to actually get them like an hour and a half down to the largest metropolitan area to take care of the injured. And so it was a very, very violent accident. And the book that I was researching, and it was old newspaper articles and such, it was talking about just how bad the train engineer passed away, as well as, I believe it was 38 soldiers from that accident. And so, I mean, there were people who were scalded, people who were impaled, people who were thrown out, very, very bad. And so in the 1980s, the Boy Scout troop, they actually went down and put a big placard on one of the big rocks that was there. But due to the weather and everything, that plaque had been washed away. And so I thought, you know, this story, because it did have so much significance and so many people perished, I felt like this little 8x8 sign was not doing it justice. And so so I went back, and about a quarter of a mile down from where the sign was, there was enough space to pull my motorcycle off onto the side of the road. And because I had to hike, so essentially you have a mountain road up here, you have the water down below, and then the train track, which was about parallel with the road. I didn't really know, you know, how the terrain was going to be. And so I hiked down the mountainside, went down to the river, and we had just had some flooding rains. And so I wasn't able to actually get to the spot that I believed was where the actual train wreck had occurred. So I was probably, like I said, about a quarter mile down from that particular spot. And so I didn't want to go at night, and I didn't, I had to really account for all the noise pollution around. So what I really liked about this episode that I put out there, it was just myself and my camera person. We hiked down there during the day. We used tools that were more, we used the EDI Plus box, which was more of an atmospheric tool. We also used the dowsing rods, the spirit box, and things that, because I knew I was probably not going to get good EVP evidence from the water and the road noise. And so I did get two EVPs that I didn't expect to get. And one of the most interesting things was I was using my SP7 spirit box. And because of the way I'm positioned between those two mountains, there was no radio interference coming through there. Mm. It was just the sound of the sweep rates going through. And so I was doing a session with the dowsing rods and the spirit box going. And I asked, can you point the rods in the direction of where the accident occurred? And so the rods pointed back behind me. And I said, is that where the accident occurred? And the only word that came up on the spirit box was waterfall. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And so I took note of everything. And then I went back the very next week when the waters had receded. And so I had to really hike down there. And as soon as you get down to the spot where the giant rock is, there's a waterfall. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was pretty neat. And it was right down where the rods had pointed to. Plus, I had a listing of all the names, and I was able to have the rods hit on some of the particular names, as well as I played old recruiting ads from that period of time. Mm-hmm. I also played going off to war type music, because that generation was very proud of their service, you know. And so what I really liked about this one was, one, and most importantly, being able to share that history. And two, I wanted to be able to show paranormal research and paranormal investigating doesn't have to happen at night. It doesn't have to be scary. And it can be thinking outside the box, using tools that could potentially be tools that are a little bit more controversial, like the spirit box and such. Yeah. But when you can get some of these things and actually validate it, and again, go back for that second time to try to validate the information we had rather than just taking it what it says in the moment. That's what I really liked about that episode. I mean, it was simple, and it actually became one of my most viewed ones just because it was so different. And then having that rolling memorial at the end, just to say, okay, you know, here are these guys that we're trying to tell their story about. And it was, I mean, no one had been down there to investigate it, which again was what I was really interested in doing.
Yeah. Cause when you were on that trip, you didn't intend to set out for this, did you? It just kind of came in your periphery, and then you got all this. That's amazing. Like, to me, that's almost an act of, you know, divine intervention of some sort. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Absolutely. Because what I was originally doing was I was riding this route, and I was looking for stories to tell along this route, so that whenever I took my bikers on it, that we would have something to highlight. And so I thought, well, there has to be something to this. And I never thought that I would be able to go back and investigate. And so I highlighted the story on the haunted motorcycle ride. And it really just kind of kept sticking with me that it was like, okay, I wonder if I can get down there. And I wonder if I can actually conduct an investigation. And so, everything just really worked out. And I mean, it was very simple investigation, but such a great story. And to be able to really have, like, I knew nothing about this. I probably grew up an hour and a half from this area, and I'd never heard this story. I think they have a monument there in the town next door, because literally Highcliff doesn't even have a red light. It's just an unincorporated little community. But Jellicoe, the town that's beside of it, they actually have a monument for it. And then they have a little museum dedicated to this troop train accident in their hardware store. So, just being able to, and I've even had bikers today that have come back and they're like, where was that spot at? And so I've told folks that it's like, if we could do something to either get another monument up there or at least clear the trees in that area where you can see out and see the spot, that would be better than just a little tiny sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this almost accidental discovery, you could be making a major difference in a community and those forgotten souls. Yeah. It's amazing how
absolutely
that can happen.
Absolutely.
For sure. Before we continue, I have a burning question here. What are your thoughts on GPS when you're traveling, and do you use it, or are you old school and say, no, I'm just going to use the map and let my senses guide me? I'd really like to know.
I do it both ways. If I'm specifically going to a destination, then I'll use my GPS. But I'm out riding, or at least either on my motorcycle or in my Jeep, at least every week. And so a lot of the time it comes from, I'll just be going down a road and I'm like, I wonder what's over there. And, you know, I've actually had some pretty cool discoveries. One in particular, I was out on a bike and I came up on this little old church. And I mean, it's just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I went up there to look at it because it had this weird, beautiful creepiness to it. Mm-hmm. And so I went up there. The front porch was falling in and I checked the door and it was open. And so I looked in and I'm like, okay, I want to go back and find the owner of this because around here, it's just, I mean, I love urban exploring, but I don't trespass into people's stuff.
Yeah.
And so I did find the owner of, or the caretaker of the church, and found out this really interesting little history about how it was a community church. It didn't have a denomination to it. And so they actually, the whole time they were in existence, they didn't actually have a pastor. And so they would have traveling pastors from community churches that would take time about preaching at this church. And so the church was in existence from the early 1900s, I think around 1920, up until 1994. And it was like they went to church one Sunday and then they just never came back. I mean, there was one of the little fans, you know, that people would, old school fans, just sitting there in one of the pews. There were hymnals sitting there. The old Bible that the pastor preached from, that looked like it was probably from the 1930s, was still sitting there in the pulpit. And so they let me come in and they let me take photos. And I guess I spent probably about 2 hours in there just taking a ton of photos. And so I ended up putting a couple of them out there. And the one of the senators here in Tennessee, somehow, I think it was one of the local county commissioners, said something to them. And they ended up using my pictures to go and get the church put on the National Historic Registry. And so, you know, just being able to find little gems like that. And it was just a day that I was just out riding, didn't have GPS or anything going on.
That's the best. One thing you mentioned in the story of that train wreck, you said you were playing old like PSAs and period music pieces. Mm-hmm. Do you find that's a good way to get contact with spirits? Because I've talked to people in the past, and some of this goes into extraterrestrial territory, which I won't talk about right now, but I think through the frequency of sounds and music and whatnot, you can attract a lot of things, whether you realize it or not. So, I mean, just generally speaking, how has that worked for you? Because I haven't heard that from a lot of investigators, but the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, that probably works more than it doesn't.
It does. It does. And of course, you know, music and sound is so powerful. And, you know, and to me, just think, you know, it's kind of like I'm big on smells and stuff. And it's like certain smells of a person you dated or a certain kind of perfume that like I wore in high school, whatever. If I smell it again, it takes me back to that time period. So I'm very big on trigger items. And I do have to plan and pack accordingly being on the bike. So I try to do as much research as I can beforehand to come up with several different kinds of trigger items. And because of the type of location that I was at, I did take like some mini flags and a few things like that, but I figured the best way to try to approach the potential spirits in this location would probably be through sound. One, because it's so hard to document the personal experiences. We are outside, so shifts in temperature is really going to be dependent on the area. And so for that particular one, I did find what's interesting enough about it. So I played a couple different marches from that period of time, and I played a couple different ads. And the ad about the bombardiers, and it happened, I played it 3 different times, and then I played it on the 2 different days, once at the crash site and once just down from the crash site. And the one about the bombardiers, where essentially it was playing these sound effects, and it was really pretty inspirational. It was kind of like, hey, have you ever wanted to fly a plane? Do you want to get up there, serve your country, and, you know, do this? And as soon as I started playing it, the temperature started shifting dramatically, and then the rods started going crazy. Mm-hmm. All the different pieces of equipment on that one particular ad was going crazy. And so, and you know, I could feel it myself when I was listening to it, that it's like, oh yeah, this is inspirational. I can see a young guy that's like, yeah, I want to do that. And so, you know, with the music, I was able to get the rods, like it was almost like it was marching to the beat. And then the temperature was marching to the beat. It would like shift up, shift down, shift up, shift down to the beat, which was really interesting. But once I played that ad, it's like it triggered something. And you could tell that there was, and it was every time I played that one particular ad.
Yeah, that's so cool. It makes so much sense to me, but it's an aspect I've never explored in these interviews. So thank you for bringing that up. It's got Absolutely. Me thinking even more. Well, Miranda, this has been awesome. And I'll definitely have you back for round two one day. But I got some Matrix style real world stuff I got to deal with. So I want to keep going with the couple of questions I have left for you.
Sure. Sure.
And then, yeah, because I got so much more I want to talk to you about, and I'm the one who's short on time today, so it's all we got to cut it a little short. But here's one of my next couple before we wrap here. So you're in the state of Tennessee. It's on my list to visit Memphis and eventually Nashville. My brother, who's also a podcaster, went to a convention in Nashville a couple of years ago. He loved it. And as for me, I am not a country music buff or historian whatsoever, but I've been learning about the haunted stories of the Rymal Auditorium and the Grand Ole Opry. What can you tell me about what you know about it, and have you ever been there for an investigation, and are the legends true?
I've not been there for an investigation, but I have heard that some of those legends are true, especially with the Ryman. That whole area just down there in Nashville, if you do get the opportunity, I do say you definitely need to do it. I am not really a big country music fan, but I will say I love blues music. And one of my bucket list locations, if you will, is I like to plan the locations around the rides. And so I really want to do the Mississippi Blues Trail, which starts in Memphis and runs down. So the Crossroads is there. I mean, there's a lot of really cool things on there. And so I essentially want to take the bike and hit from Memphis going down through Mississippi down to New Orleans and hit some of those blues places and do investigations on some of those. But the Ryman would be amazing to do if you get the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm going to make that happen one day for sure. So you're looking to go down the back roads that Robert Johnson allegedly traveled?
Yes.
And made the deal of a lifetime?
That's right.
Cool. Right on. Yeah, let me know how that goes whenever you're able to get to that, because I'd be curious to know. So you mentioned earlier that you're back to doing Paracon appearances in this COVID world that we are in now. And very recently you were at Las Cruces Paracon 2021, not too long ago. I was just wondering quickly if you could tell me how that went and how are these conventions and meet and greets going overall in a post COVID world? Cause I'd love to know.
Yeah. So here in Tennessee and here in the South where I'm at, we never really completely shut down here. Mm-hmm. So, and I travel all over, but, last year I only had like one event that was canceled, and that was Las Cruces. It was supposed to be in 2020 was the first one. So they did postpone it to 2021. And then I actually postponed an event that I had in November because the cases had started to go up. And so, and it was an indoor event. And so I didn't want to expose myself or others to that. So, and that was November of last year. But I had several Harley events. These did take place outside, and we were limited on our numbers. We still had about 300 people last year that came. This year, the events were a little fewer and farther between. I had a couple one was St. Albans that I was going to in Virginia, and I was supposed to be a speaker. They did, because their government, and of course it changes based on state, But they were only allowing so many people in. So they did have us speakers come and do an investigation, but they actually canceled the meet and greet. But Las Cruces, things are starting to kind of get better here in the States. And I think the attendance number was down, especially it's kind of hard with the first annual one. But I know they had really been, you know, busting their butts to get the word out and stuff. I think it was just there's still that fear. But we had a lot of speakers. And essentially it ended up being a good turnout, and I'm curious to see how my one in Harley there in Florida is going to do, because Florida's pretty wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I'm glad to hear it, because here in Ontario where I'm at, about a year ago, we got out of it. It looked like started to loosen up, and then we got a lockdown on Christmas Eve for a couple of months. And then we got another one on Good Friday, which lasted even longer. So, I mean, even though things are pretty cool right now, we're way behind the curve. And just a couple of days before we met up for this recording, they finally gave the green light to run indoor concert and sporting events at full capacity. So, like,
wow.
When I hear, like, either from you or Christy or whoever I'm talking to in the South, and they're like, oh, yeah, we've been living it up for months now. And I'm like, oh, really? Like, must be nice, because it's like the complete opposite here. So, but I'm glad you guys are back into it and that you guys are staying safe. So,
trying to take every precaution we can.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, the good thing about investigating, that never really slowed us down, because like, being a solo investigator, I'm essentially social distancing on the bike and I only have one other person with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the meet and greet stuff that has taken a hit. And then, of course, the tourism, like here at the jail and stuff. Starting a tour company during a pandemic is very stressful.
Oh, I can imagine. I've gotten to know a couple of people who started new businesses during the pandemic, and I'm just blown away. I'm like, how are you doing this? Like, this is pretty amazing. You've made the pivots and the followed the protocols, and they've been successful. It's not like it's been one and done. So I give credit to anyone who's hustling during this period of time. And I'm just starting to get back into it myself, because I can actually start moving around and do stuff again. Before we let the true believers know where they can find you and all the wonderful work you've done, I'm going to bring this up because I brought it up to Christy as well. And little exclusive hint here, she is going to be coming back on Unexplained Incorporated as my first guest of 2022. I'm not going to give the exact nature, because it's a surprise and it's going to be a really cool chat we're going to have going on. But I told her about some places up here in Canada to check out if she ever made it up here. And I wanted to offer some of those to you as well. But I'm just wondering, like, before COVID hit, did you ever think of crossing like into Ontario or the other provinces and checking out some of the old historic haunts? Because this is former colonial 1812 like country, so like there's a lot of activity if you know where to find it.
Yeah, I would love to come up in that area when things open up. The last time I was in Canada was when I was a kid, and that was essentially the tourist side there at Niagara Falls, you know. Yep. Yes, so much interesting history up there. Yeah, I would love to talk to you about some different places up there.
Cool. I've only explored a couple so far, because I told you about we've been in serious states of restriction the last year and a bit, but like it looks like we're finally about to pull through and the alarm bells are dying down finally. But I'll just mention this real quick. On Halloween night, I'm going to Niagara on the Lake, which is right on the Ontario New York border, and it's billed as the most haunted town in Canada. I did their ghost tour, their official ghost tour, last summer, and it was pretty cool. But now I'm exclusively going to Fort George. Which has major activity from what I've been told. And in the springtime, spring of 2022, I'm going to be taking a major step forward in terms of tours and stuff. And I'm probably going to go all the way out to Kingston, which is like a good 3 to 4 hours from me, but it's got a lot of rich history and activity. Because one of the things I wanted to do when I started this show was I wanted to go on tours like at least once a month, and maybe do an entire episode just on the tour. But of course, I started this show 2 weeks after everything locked down, so that didn't exactly work out. But we're almost heading into the winter season. So after Halloween, a lot of these tours dry up for the season. Mm-hmm. So spring of 2022, I want to really nail it. And then I'll have a lot more of a resume of places I've been and hopefully get to witness some activity. So yeah, like if you and Christy ever come up here separately or together, you know, reach out and let me know. And
for sure.
Make something happen. But Miranda, thank you again. This has been awesome. It just flew by. And there's so much more I know we can talk about. So we'll do it another time because, like I said, I'm on a time restraint today, which is always unfortunate. And I just want to say, too, thank you for keeping your content short, because with this podcast, I have a rule of my own where anything that goes above the 2.5 hour mark, I split it into two shows because
yes.
There are podcasters out there, and bless them, they are wonderful. But when they start going in that 3-2, and some of them go up to like 7 hour range,
No
matter how good they are, I check out. I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll look, and that's why I try to do what I do, because a lot of the time, the only time I have to sit down is usually when I'm eating or if I take a break during the day for, so that 15 to 20 minutes. And then I started having people saying, oh, we want more content. It needs to be longer. And so if I'm going past that 40-minute mark, because if I see an episode that's, you know, over a certain amount of time, I'm just like, if I can't listen to it, if I got to watch it, then, you know, I just don't have the time. And so I didn't want that to be the case with mine.
Well, with me, it has to be, if it's someone else's show that goes into that length, it has to be a very, very special guest for me to listen to. You know what I mean? So that's what I try to do my best, and I like that you do the same as well. So where can the true believers find you once again? Because I know online you've got a lot going on. So
I do. We got a whole lot going on. So the best place to find me, I'm the most active on the Ghost Biker Explorations Facebook page. I do lives. You can watch all of my videos there, but then also on the Ghost Biker Explorations YouTube channel, and then under www.ghostbikerexplorations.com. I've got the Ghost Biker merchandise there. I'm an artist, and the way I fund my travels and everything is through the sale of my artwork. And so all of that is on there, as well as all the episodes. We are in season 4. Typically season 4 would drop the first Tuesday in October, but because of just opening the jail and traveling to New Mexico and everything, the very first episode of season 4 is going to drop tomorrow night, which is going to be Tuesday night. And so it will drop every Tuesday during the month of October, followed by a live stream every Thursday. And that is at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And those can be seen on the Ghost Biker Explorations Facebook, YouTube, and website.
Awesome. Keeping active. And thank you again. I know there's so much more we could talk about. And I wish you a very safe and fun weekend down in Florida on Halloween weekend, and have safe travels overall. And we'll do this again at some point.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
There you have it. The ghost biker herself, Miranda Young. I had high expectations for this episode, and she more than definitely exceeded them. And those expectations came from the fact that she's a business partner and a friend of Dr. Christy Sumner, who, as you all know, came on in mid to late August and hit a home run when there was 2 strikes against me and I was on the verge of not being able to have a show that week. But she helped me out, and then she introduced me to Miranda, and just as good, in my opinion. I don't want to say one guest is better than another, but they both delivered. And yeah, that's true. At the end of the interview, Christy will be coming on back on Unexplained Incorporated in January of 2022. Closer to the time, I'm going to announce what we have in mind, but she's helping us out with a very special edition of the Unexplained case study. And yeah, it's going to be good. That's all I'm going to say for right now. As for this interview, it's really funny. I had a virtual appointment after recording with Miranda, or at least I was supposed to. And like 5 minutes I got off the call with her, I see a text on my phone saying that the appointment had to be canceled because they weren't done their Thanksgiving dinner yet. It was it was running behind, so they had to reschedule it until the next night. So I could have talked to Miranda a bit longer, but this happened during our recording, and I didn't check my phone till after we were done. So, but I think what we have here is great, and we'll build on it for the next time she comes on the show, as she is welcome back at any time. And a lot from this interview really had me thinking, because not only did I learn a lot, especially with the, the auditory aspects of trying to attract spirits through old radio ads and music. That was really cool stuff that I hadn't really heard before. And it makes perfect sense to me. And I have a feeling the local haunts that she's visited, that's only one of many. And I'd like to get into a bit more of that when she comes back on. But like I said, at the time, I thought I was up against the clock, but it is what it is. And yeah, it is Canadian Thanksgiving at the time of this recording, but I had my family dinner on the Sunday night. And it's so interesting just to hear the different perspectives of how different pockets of the world are dealing with COVID, because we talked a little bit about that off the air. And yeah, certain parts of the United States are taking a much more laissez-faire attitude compared to where I'm at. And personally, I don't think that's a horrible thing, but that attitude and that mindset really pisses off some people. So interesting to get different perspectives from different parts of the world. And that's one of the reasons I love doing this show. And it just got me thinking, like, people like her and Christy and Jackie Trevelia, our Aussie friend out of London, England, like, they just took charge and they started, you know, becoming investigators, ghost tour facilitators, and just went about their business the right way, and have had awesome appearances on the show and are just doing great things for people right now. And it's got me, it's stoking some of my internal flames to get started on some grandiose, amazing ideas I have that could potentially tie into this podcast. But this whole thing with a partially closed border and just lifting some restrictions in my neck of the woods that have been lifted in other parts of North America many moons ago, it does get a little frustrating at times, but it is also wildly out of my control, and I just gotta roll with the punches. And it just really ignited my passion for travel again, not even on an international scale, but just traveling more locally in my neck of the woods in Ontario and just seeing what I can find. As both Miranda and Christy have found a lot on their own in their own journeys without even realizing it. And I love those types of synchronistic stories. One day, true believers, we're going to take some tours together, maybe internationally. We'll just have to wait and see where the cards fall for that. But yeah, I'm going to be at Fort George in Niagara on the Lake Halloween night. And if anything significant happens, I may go live on my Instagram page or may do a little recording into my iPhone and tack it on to the beginning of the November case study as a bonus. We will just have to wait and see what happens. But it's a very exciting time, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And next week on Unexplained Incorporated, Reverend Mela Borowski is coming on. And this interview is an intense one. It starts out really intense because Mela had a very difficult upbringing, and we get into that right off the bat, right from the beginning. And it's a story that needs to be told. And it's a little intense and upsetting at times, but throughout the interview, we lighten up a lot and share a lot of good laughs. And she identifies as many things, but what she identifies primarily as is a green witch. And you'll have to tune in and find out what that is. And that's a really deep thinking, intense, fascinating, and ends up being a funny interview by the end, because we are able to laugh off at a lot of things together, and it felt really good. So the Reverend Borowski coming on to Unexplained Incorporated next week, and that is one you absolutely don't want to miss, as it goes into a number of different directions and you'll learn just as much. that you did on this show, albeit about different subject matter. And she is joining us from South Carolina, another state I have never been to, but would love to visit one day, and has its own rich history in and of itself. So True Believers, just a quick reminder, you could find Unexplained Incorporated on Facebook. You could follow there at PhantomPhil3 on Twitter. And we're all over Instagram. There's the Unexplained Incorporated page. There's my personal page, Phantom Phil Unexplained. And that's the one I update more frequently for breaking news and exclusive stories and commentaries. Angel Card Amy, you could find her on Instagram as well. And she runs the official Instagram page for Unexplained Incorporated. Give all of us a follow. And we're getting closer to Halloween night. It's going to be sweet. But in the meantime, I think you've heard enough of me. And I need some food because, man, I'm winded and hungry after that one. But it was great. In the meantime, though, you know how this all goes. Take your risks, but stay safe, stay strong, and by all means, stay curious, because if you ain't curious, you may as well already be dead. This wraps up another edition of Unexplained Incorporated, and the doors for this proverbial shop are now closed.